Thank you for joining us. We've just been hearing about the importance of forging a more sustainable industrial development policy, and we have a very timely discussion for you now. We know that NATO members have been meeting to reassert the importance of the alliance and also reinvigorate the transatlantic bond. And we have a conversation now with the Deputy Secretary General of NATO, Mr. Mircea Joana, who is joining us from Brussels. And he will be in conversation with Mr. Wolfgang Niedermach, who is a member of the Executive Board at the Federation of German Industries. Before Mr. Niedermach leads this discussion, Mr. Joana will get us underway with a statement. So, Mr. Joana, I'll hand the screen over to you now.
Thank you so much, Sumi, and thank you for the kind introduction. Wolfgang, thank you, and BDE for hosting these Industry Days. And the title of our conversation today asks how a more global NATO can provide security in the future. And I'm here to say that this is the business of our alliance. We've been providing for more than seven decades security for now, close to 1 billion citizens in 30 NATO nations quite effectively. We've done this in the past, and we are now preparing to do the same thing for the future. And it's a great pride for anyone working for NATO or living in a NATO nation to know that we are the most successful alliance in history. And this was reaffirmed solemnly by our leaders just 2 days ago. Which are the key ingredients to our enduring success? First, it's our unity. The fact that we are a unique organization, a group of 30 nations across the Atlantic, in Europe and North America. Secondly, our ability to adapt to a rapidly changing world. And, oh yes, this is a rapidly changing world we are living in. And also our values. Because that's, in the end, the values we all share are the glue of what we are. And this was basically, in a nutshell, the political and instrumental decisions that our leaders have taken at the summit. This was a very important summit for our alliance. Sometimes we call it a pivotal moment for our security, now and in the future. Because a time when we face growing global competition and complex threats to our security is here, including Russia and China's challenges to the rules-based international order, brutal terrorism, sophisticated cyber attacks, disruptive technologies, and indeed, climate change. So at the summit, we agreed on a very ambitious agenda through the NATO 2030 initiative that Secretary General Stoltenberg initiated in order to continue to keep our people safe and free now and in the future. Faced with a more competitive world, we agreed to enhance our unity and cohesion, strengthening NATO as the unique and indispensable forum for Europe and North America to ensure our shared security, deciding, consulting, and acting together, and reinforcing our military posture by continuing to increase the readiness of our forces, modernize our capabilities, and invest more in our collective defense. In a complex world, we agreed to broaden our approach to security. And I think this is also important for the private sector and industry, because the definition we are used to have on security has now broadened, and the pandemic has only added new ingredients, new dimensions, new complexities to this very definition of security. So we will work together to set national goals to increase the resilience of our societies, of our infrastructure and supply chains. And Germany, a huge powerhouse economically, an export-driven economy, you're also very much keen to be part of this conversation. We launched a new Defense Innovation Accelerator for the North Atlantic to boost transatlantic cooperation on new technologies. I'm chairing the Innovation Board in NATO, and I know the importance of being able to adopt new technologies, and many of the new technologies are now produced and conceptualized in the private sector. So we need to work as NATO, both with industry, but also with academia and our fantastic innovation ecosystems. We also decided to create a multinational opt-in innovation fund to support startups working on emerging and disruptive technologies. We heard around the NATO table at the summit a number of nations already expressing interest to contribute to this new innovation fund. Also, something which is very much in the news, and this is something that was part of the discussion between the U.S. president in Cornwall at the G7, here at the NATO summit, the U.S.-EU high-level discussions, and also, I'm convinced, the Geneva talks between President Biden and President Putin. Cyber is one of the most complex, controversial, and competitive domains in today's world. This is why allies agreed at our summit on a new cyber policy to ensure we have the capabilities and the political mechanisms and consultations that allow us to effectively prevent and respond, if needed, to malicious cyber activities. An important part of the summit agenda was also further work to strengthen the resilience we have in the alliance. Some of you might know that we have been embarking on resilience indicators for the last 5-6 years. And now we are stepping up our game. And of course, resilience is mostly a national, or in the case of federal countries like Germany, also at state level prerogative. But we believe that doing also things collectively, learning from each other, investing in our common resilience is something that is useful, and that's why our leaders decided to further boost our work in resilience. Because resilience is our first line of defense. 90% of military transport and 70% of military communications depend upon robust civilian infrastructure and services. We need to make sure that our societies, our supply chains, our infrastructure, our telecommunication systems are more resistant to hostile pressure and able to recover rapidly from shocks. Resilience is also key to pushing back on potential adversaries who use a broad range of military, political, and economic tools to try to weaken our societies and undermine allied security. NATO already plays an important role in bolstering resilience, including by setting minimum standards of resilience for allies. Hence, we, together with nations and here in NATO, will take a broader and more coordinated approach to resilience and have agreed to develop national resilience plans based on clearer and more measurable allies-wide resilience objectives. Also, allies have agreed to designate a senior official in national governments to drive forward national efforts and to enhance and streamline consultations within NATO. We also agreed to set the gold standard on addressing the security implications of climate change at our summit. I'm personally very happy, and Secretary General Stoltenberg is very proud at the fact that our leaders approved an action plan to look into, on the one side, how can we mitigate, anticipate, and react to the security implications of climate change, and also to make sure that our militaries significantly reduce military emissions and contribute us to the important goals set internationally. In a more contested world, we agreed to step up our support to upholding the rule-based order, another very important deliverable of our summit. Because we decided, and leaders approved, to significantly boost and deepen our existing partnerships. And I will say that NATO's strategic partnership with the European Union is of the utmost importance to us. I'm also dealing on SecGen's behalf on NATO-EU, and we know that we will be doing more things together. We also need to embrace and work even closer with our partners in the Asia-Pacific, Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and South Korea, and to continue to harness and broaden our existing partnerships all over the world. We have more than 40 nations partners of NATO, but we'll need to explore even new engagements in Africa, in Latin America, in Asia. We also substantially need to step up our training and capacity building support for partners. This is a way to increase stability on our borders. And finally, this is probably the most strategic decision of our leaders at the summit. They agreed, and we agreed, to develop NATO's next strategic concept. I would like to thank Germany and Thomas de Maizière, who was one of the two co-chairs of the reflection process that in a way, helped us and the Secretary General and our leaders to move forward on this new next strategic concept of NATO. This is why we need to recommit to our values, to reflect on the fundamental changes of the past decade in the strategic environment, to underpin our high level of ambition. This is why our leaders and allied leaders agreed that we need also something that I know is always a complex conversation, but we need the right resources, both in continuing to increase national defense spending, but also to do more in terms of common funding across all three NATO budgets, military, civil, and infrastructure. This could help support, for instance, more joint training and exercises, stronger cyber defenses, cutting-edge capabilities, and capacity building for our partners. So this is NATO 2030, an ambitious agenda to ensure that our alliance stays stronger, more ready, and more united, fit for the challenges of today, and future-proof for those of tomorrow. So we are looking forward, happy, a little bit tired after a very complex summit, but we look forward to rolling up our sleeves and putting this new agenda into action. And we are convinced that by the Madrid summit of 2022, we'll be able to deliver all the decisions that our leaders have decided to entrust us with. So thank you so much for having me, and I'm looking forward to your questions.
Yeah, thank you very much, Deputy Secretary General, Mr. Joanna. It's really a pleasure. Thank you for joining us here for this target reduction industry. I can really reassure you that we are pretty much on the same page about the size of the challenge. We cannot dig deeper in every aspect you have just described. But of course, we are well aware in the business community about the new global competitive environment. It was BDI who came up with a paper 2 years ago when we named this competition with China as a systemic rivalry. We know that. Of course, it creates a certain dilemma for our multinational corporations in Germany, in Europe, how to deal with a potential bipolar world. We don't want to shy away from addressing this conflict, but of course, we need to find answers. How to still cooperate with our partners in autocratic systems in Russia and in China in particular, but still see this systemic rivalry, which you are also addressing in your strategy. So what is your expectation to the companies in this situation? How can we cooperate and still follow the same strategy, but still have our license to operate in problematic partner countries?
Thank you for the question. And this is, again, a very important conversation. And the rise of China is probably the most consequential transformation of global affairs in decades, if not centuries. So this is why NATO, in our previous strategic concept of 2010, there was not one single word about China. Even Russia was considered as a potential partner of NATO. So recognizing that the rise of China is both an opportunity, a massive country with a big economy, and of course, business opportunities. This is something which is absolutely, you know, self-evident. But also the rise of China is also posing concerns, security concerns, many actions that they are taking, not only in China or around China, but also here in Europe and around the world, in Africa, are subjects of concern. There should be a form of adaptation to this new geopolitical reality, also from NATO, also from the EU, also from individual nations, including Germany. I do believe, and this is, I think, the key in which we should read the final communique of the NATO summit, that there is a possibility that competition and cooperation can really work together. Because competition it is. It's competition for political influence. It is competition for markets. It's competition for technological edge. It's competition amongst values between democracies and let's say, authoritarian regimes. But this should not preclude cooperation. And I think this is the art of our leaders and our organizations and of the world, to find the right balance between competition, which will be intense, is intense or become even more intense, and cooperation on the other side. So that's why the language that you have seen in our communique, which is, of course, more ample than in London in 2019, when we were speaking about challenges and opportunities, now it's a little bit more specific, is not very far from what, as you have mentioned, Wolfgang, the BDI, but also the European Union, was trying to describe China as a competitor, as a partner, and as a systemic rival. So China is a big transformation, and we have to find the right issues. And I think engaging with China, convincing China to be part of the arms control architecture around the world, is important. Already they are contributing to climate change. We are withdrawing from Afghanistan. I think all of us are interested, including China, including Russia, for Afghanistan not to fall again into the situation that was a safe haven for terrorism. So there is also responsibility with power. So I believe, and also the voice of Chancellor Merkel, including at the summit, was, like always, a voice of reason, a wise leader. And I think we found the right balance in our decisions and our deliberations at the summit on China.
Exactly, Alwin. That's the same challenge for our companies. We need to find a balance. It's a balancing act. Sometimes it will create dilemmas. We are well aware that we are heading to, especially in the realm what you address as rapid new technologies, the environment we are in when it comes to hybrid threats, which is affecting not only the classical military complex, but also the companies, especially the multinational companies. You would be happy to hear that German industry has launched a transatlantic business initiative last week in order to discuss these challenges with our transatlantic partners, which I think is a prerequisite to deal with all these issues. And it's good to hear. One of our realms we are discussing in this transatlantic business initiative is joint concepts for data transfer, data protection, innovation, and so forth in the digital world. And perhaps I don't think I have time that you can go into detail on this innovation, but I want to tell you that we are really interested in joining these efforts and supporting it and fueling it with technology and capital. And perhaps that is another field where we can join forces between the NATO and the business community in Europe and the transatlantic.
No, I think you're very much right. As I mentioned, I think in my first intervention, I'm chairing the innovation board in NATO. So we're working a lot on new technologies. And today, more than 90% of the innovation on technological transformations, including for military and security purposes, what they call dual-use technologies, are produced, invented, and financed by the private sector. So for us, it is vital to engage with industry, it's vital to engage with academia, it's vital to engage not only with the big technological companies, but also with the smaller startups. And if you want the Diana accelerator and the investment fund is also a way for us to be part of this conversation. I'll be more than happy to engage institutionally with BDI on these topics. We're doing this almost daily, and why not think one of the next innovation boards for having a conversation on what can be done, and we'll be more than happy to engage into this. I'll mention one thing also, which relates also to, if you want, to arms control and to a predictable international environment, which is also very important for business. You cannot thrive, you cannot do business if you don't have security and predictability. So this is why I believe that NATO and EU and countries in Europe and North America would also try to find the new ways in which we can find the international law, norms and ethics that will be in a way regulating and enshrining norms and rules globally for AI, for data, for quantum, for biotechnology, for space. And this is where NATO is. We do not have the power of regulation like the EU, but we have an immense power, which is the power of standardization. Once NATO decides on a standard on anything related to security, it becomes automatically, even for our competitors, right, a gold standard. And I will encourage you to look into our AI strategy that my colleagues from the specialized components of NATO have been producing. And this is about AI in conflict and warfare. So you'll be seeing there how much of our values, of our ethical norms, about making sure that there is a predictable use of new technologies in defense and security is very much present. This is why NATO-EU is vital in terms of cooperation, on resilience, on new technologies, on space, on climate change, on the rise of China. So I do believe that there is so much synergies between us and the private sector and academia, but also between NATO and EU. And I salute the fact that you have this council, Transatlantic Council, as I salute, even if it's not our direct business here in NATO, that the EU and US decided to have this Trade and Technology Council. I think the more we harness the synergies of the transatlantic world, the better chances we'll have to have an international global system of norms, giving predictability and also assurances for private sector, for investments and for exports that will be done properly and not being abused or misused by bellwether players.
Indeed, and I think a synergy is a good note there. Perhaps if I can jump in, apologies, Mr. Niedermach, we are indeed running out of time. So I think that's all we're going to be able to get to, but I think we also covered a lot of ground. So thank you both, Mr. Joanna, for making time, and Mr. Niedermach for leading that discussion. We hope you enjoyed it as well. And we're going to stay with the transatlantic theme, if you will, in a conversation coming up with Jay Timmons, who is the president of the National Association of Manufacturers in the U.S. So thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.